Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Cigna Autism Awareness Series conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference to Ms. Lauren Presti. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you, Augusta. Good day, and thank you for calling the Cigna's Autism Awareness Series. My name is Lauren Presti, and I am a care manager for the autism team at Cigna Behavioral Health. Due to the format of this call, you will not be able to ask questions during the teleconference. However, at the end of the conference, you will be transferred to a brief five-question survey in which we are requesting your feedback regarding your experience in today's seminar. After the survey, you will be able to ask questions on today's seminar. A handout for today's seminar is available online at www.cignabehavioral.com. On the left-hand side, click on Autism Awareness, scroll to the top of the screen to find today's handout. Please note that not all policies cover today's topic. For more specific information about your policy and what your policy covers, please contact the autism team by calling the number on the back of your insurance card. Today, I have the pleasure of introducing Linda LeBlanc. Dr. LeBlanc is a board-certified behavioral analyst doctorate as well as a licensed clinical psychologist, and she's currently serving as the director of research and clinical services at Trumpet Behavioral Health. Thank you for being here, Dr. LeBlanc, and you're welcome to begin your presentation.
Thank you. Welcome, everyone, and I hope you will find the information that we're going to be talking about today useful. We're going to talk about issues of community safety for individuals with autism spectrum disorders, the kinds of concerns that most commonly occur and lead families to worry about their loved ones, and then some strategies that you can employ for building independence and community activities and functional independence and safety. I will try to remember to let you know when I move on to the next slide so that if you do have the presentation, you can follow along with me. So I will move to the next slide and talk a little bit about why it's important to be able to have the greatest amount of access to the community possible. So, you know, our community really is our world, the people in it, the things and the opportunities in it, and the larger your community, the better your quality of life, the more connections you have to more people, to more activities, to more leisure pursuits, to more experiences that expand your horizons, and the more relationships you're able to build. So for most of us, we potentially have a community as large as the globe, but for a lot of individuals with autism spectrum disorders, concerns about safety issues really shrinks the functional world of those individuals. So the community might be primarily the family, possibly a church community, and a school system. And outside of those places, there are issues and concerns about safety that kind of lead families to make their world as small as they can feel comfortable with. So I'll move on to the next slide. If you see these pictures, but the question that I think any family wants to ask for their child is, how big is their world? And what opportunities do they have? And what are the things that might lead us to be concerned about them operating in their world independently? And so when you're thinking long-term about a life that as a, you know, growing up young person and teenager and adult, we always have the goal to have an individual with an autism spectrum disorder to have a world as big as anyone else's, to have a life that includes fun activities at the mall and being with their peers and being able to cross streets safely and play in playgrounds and operate independently. Move on to the next slide, and you can see a quote by Dr. Geraldine Dawson, who is the science director for Autism Speaks. And it deals with this issue of wandering and elopement. So that is, very often, individuals with autism will leave their loved ones, wandering away or purposefully darting away to get to some activity or simply because they don't notice where they are. But the functional impact of that individual is missing from their family, unmonitored, and potentially unsafe during that time. And this issue is critical to families, and it's one that has to be addressed in a manner that protects health and safety for individuals who wander. And it's not just that the individual who wanders is momentarily or even for a period of time missing or unsupervised. It's that lots of problems can occur during that period. So not only is there just anxiousness and where are you, but we live in a world where not everyone is as nice as they should be. And if an individual doesn't have stranger safety skills, when they are unmonitored, they are potentially vulnerable. And if they wander away and have not been aware of their surroundings, they may be lost and not have the problem-solving skills to be able to assist other people in helping them be reunited with their family. And then the other main concern that is highly problematic is water safety. So very often, one of the things that individuals with ASD will elope towards is access to water. And so if they don't have appropriate water safety skills, that can be a huge safety concern as well. So it's not just the wandering or elopement per se, it's all of the potential pitfalls that can occur during that unmonitored, unsupervised time that leads families to be very concerned about this issue. I'll move on to the next slide now. In a recent survey by the Interactive Autism Network, which was done in 2011, almost half of parents with children with autism spectrum disorders reported that their child elopes or wanders away, and the peak age at which this occurs is age 4. And over half of those families who reported that their child does elope had had a child missing long enough to cause significant concern about their safety. So this isn't just those few moments when you turn around in the grocery store and, oh, my goodness, where are they, but they've just walked on to the next aisle. It certainly includes that, but it also includes much more substantial time away from the family where safety issues can be can occur. So children with autism spectrum disorder not only are more likely to elope with the peak at age 4, they are 8 times more likely to continue to elope at older ages, such as 7 to 10, than their typically developing siblings. So, you know, we as a parent, and I am one also, we're always monitoring our young children and where are they and hold my hand and always wanting to know exactly where they are and have them certainly within line of sight. But as our children get a bit older, they become a little more cognizant of their environment and more independent, and we are less concerned about them wandering off when they get to be age 7 to 10, school age. And in fact, those concerns about will they wander off and the safety issues persist for families with a child on the autism spectrum. So let's talk a little bit more in the next slide about some of those related dangers. More than one-third of lost children, and this is in the same survey, can't convey their name, address, or phone number. And so this is a critical skill if you ever do get lost to be able to access community supports to help you get back with your family. This is my name. This is my mom or dad's name. This is where I live, and this is maybe a cell phone number. So when a child can't convey that, the adult who does find them and would like to help them reunite with their family is limited in information to be able to quickly reunite them. In addition, 2 out of 3 parents report that their missing child had had a close call with a traffic injury. So, you know, they've wandered off, they're now lost, and their pedestrian traffic safety skills are not independent And so they perhaps wander out into the street or walk out in a parking lot and are not appropriately aware of the kinds of pedestrian safety skills that would allow them to be safe if they weren't monitored. And finally, one out of three parents whose children wandered off reported a close call with a possible drowning. So these are real and significant dangers that occur in addition to the danger of a child wandering off. Let's move on to the next slide and talk about the impact that that has on families. I think, you know, particularly when you have a child that has done this before, has wandered off or eloped and they've gone missing even for a short period of time, this produces enormous stress. In this survey, over 40% of parents have suffered sleep disruption due to fear of elopement. And sometimes the elopement actually occurs at night. And so part of what disrupts the sleep is, of course, that general worry, but also that, are they going to get up in the middle of the night and exit my home unexpectedly? And this is one of the concerns that does persist into later childhood, particularly with those individuals who have a more substantial cognitive impairment. The other kind of stressful issue is if, you know, let's say it's not night, I'm with my child, but parents often respond to this stress of we might have an elopement or a gone missing event by restricting how much they do outside of their home or else doing things outside of their home with their child, but kind of constantly being very fearful and vigilant about where are they, have they wandered off, how will I keep them safe. So those kinds of things are exactly the stressors that can erode quality of life and lead to that kind of shrinking world where you are, let's say, less likely to participate in your church community or your local area sporting events or whatever it might be that are just kind of part of everyday life for most families that potentially get eliminated or truncated in terms of enjoyment for families of a child on the autism spectrum. Let's look at the next slide and talk a little bit about what I recommend, which is a two-pronged approach to managing the potential likelihood of elopement or wandering or a child becoming lost. I think we want to take a two-pronged approach to kind of build the best possible future. So the first is what many families already do, and that is supervise, but also potentially using some additional strategies that assist with monitoring and recovery. So regardless of what skills the child has, obviously knowing where they are, knowing where they're going, being able to monitor them, and if something happens, being able to recover them very quickly so that there is the most minimal amount of time away from the family possible is something that is important to take care of and I think often makes families feel safer, that they have a safety net, that if something does go wrong, that they know what the immediate strategy is to be able to do something about it. So your three main strategies there are personal supervision, which I think we all do to our greatest extent possible, but we just have to appreciate that that's not a foolproof system. There are also some electronic monitoring systems that can be useful and some organized recovery systems, and we'll talk more about those in a few minutes. The second approach is one that I think is equally important. So, of course, what we want to do is prevent elopement and wandering and loss and what have you. But In the instance that it does occur, we want to ensure that children have the skills that they need to be safe, perhaps when they are unmonitored. And, you know, even in the instances where a person is not wandering away or eloping, we're always wanting to build that future where our children become more independent and more capable of doing things when we are not there, and that they can, you know, walk to the playground or explore their neighborhood and what have you. And those community safety skills are things that that simply have to occur if we are going to build that future independence where a child becomes a person who goes to school and does so independently and graduates from school and has the opportunity to go to college or have a job and navigate their community and their world in the fullest possible way. So some of the skills that I think are critical to target are, how do you respond when you get lost? What do you do? Stranger safety, pedestrian safety, and water safety. So based on how much time we have today, we are going to try to talk about the first three of those skill building at least. All right, so let's talk a little bit about monitoring and recovery. The first thing that I want to talk about is systems that are designed to detect exit. So these are electronic systems that can be very useful for your home if you do have concerns that your child might go out the door and wander off and go exploring the environment or go to their favorite place and not be able to, and not let you know and not be able to find their way back. So what these systems do is detect and alert that someone has left an area. In particular, these can be very useful at nighttime if you are concerned about your loved one getting up and wandering at night. So the WanderGuard products are one line that were primarily developed in dementia care, but are just as useful, I think, for individuals on the autism spectrum. So there are systems that can be attached to the bedroom door that will alert the parents when the door is open. There are also systems that can be attached to the bed that will let you know when the person gets out of the bed. And then the same systems can be attached to the outside doors and, if need be, the windows of a home. And then the person that you would like to monitor actually wears a bracelet. So you can see a couple of different versions of this where there is either a pendant that you can wear around your necklace or a bracelet, and then the electronic monitoring equipment. Now, these are not really, they are detection, but not high-end tracking systems. And so the alarm goes off, and essentially you get up and monitor very quickly and find where the person, where's the person located right now. There are also some comprehensive, if we go to the next slide, some comprehensive programs that are taking off around the country. For example, Project Lifesaver is the largest national level monitoring and rescue and retrieval program. This is many individuals, again, with dementia can be registered for this, but a growing number of children, and particularly children with autism spectrum disorders, are being registered for Project Lifesaver. So it is in several states, and you can find out if Project Lifesaver, if you move to the next slide, is in your state. It's currently used in about 45 states, and there is no cost to the user. So you can find out more information about this at www.projectlifesaver.org. And essentially the way this works is that there is a locator that is worn on the wrist or ankle, and it emits a signal every 24 seconds that can be used to actually locate the missing individual. So they're always wearing the signal. It's always going off, and as soon as the parent detects that their child is not in the proximity, they can initiate the search, and the signal can be used to locate that missing individual, and a team can go to retrieve the individual. So the good news about this kind of system, it won't necessarily alert you when the person is out of your proximity. So there's still that reliance on supervision. You don't have the detection system the way you do for stationary systems, but you do have that now I don't know where they are and I can find them, which the other system does not have. So in overall, search time has been reduced to about 30 minutes in most cases, and that is about a 95% reduction over standard operations where there is no GPS-type tracking system that can be used to quickly locate the individual. So there are lots of initiatives that have occurred to fund this, and certainly worth looking into if your state is one of the ones that has Project Lifesaver. Now, if you do not have Project Lifesaver, you can also do a personal GPS tracking system, and those are generally around $200 to $250. And I have not encountered one system that I think is any better than the others. They all work essentially the same way, where it, there is a GPS signal and the person wears a locator. There are some where you can sew it into a jacket, clip it onto a belt, clip it onto a backpack. For all of those, you just need to be very confident that the person is not going to take the jacket off. So some of these can actually be put into a shoe, but again, if your loved one kicks off their shoes a lot, that's a problem. As long as they have the GPS tracking system with them, so if you can get them to wear it as a watch and not take that off, that's going to be optimal, and then they can be tracked using that system. And then there are also some sound-based alerts. These are by far the lowest cost systems. They generally are around $30. And what these essentially do is they assist you with the personal monitoring. So the person has a sensor, and the parent is holding the receiver, and essentially a sound goes off if the child leaves a settable proximity of, let's say, a 10-foot radius or a 20 to 30-foot radius. And so this can be a nice portable option. Let's say if you're going to the playground and you are kind of wanting to gradually increase the amount of distance to kind of let your child be a little bit more independent, but want to kind of know if they are getting far away from you. And particularly if a child darts, this you definitely want this alert. Okay, so let's move on to the next slide and talk a little bit about, so that was monitoring and recovery, and I think having one of those kinds of systems, the feeling of well-being that it might provide as an additional safety net in case anything would happen, I think really can help with parent stress. The other part of it is building those skill sets for the future. So let's talk a little bit about teaching an individual to respond when they do get lost. There are some critical components for teaching any child how to respond when they're lost, whether they have any kind of autism spectrum disorder or other disability. The critical things to do are to not panic and to find someone safe to help you, and to be able to tell that safe person how to reach your family relatively quickly. So that skill set is a critical one. If you look around and suddenly don't know where you are, don't know where your family is, don't know how to get back to them, don't panic, don't start crying, don't become emotional. Look around, try to identify someone that you think is safe, and then think about what you're going to need to tell them. I need some help. I'm lost. Please find my mom. And then how do you get them that number? Now, there have been several studies that have investigated and developed protocols for teaching individuals with autism spectrum disorders and intellectual disabilities how to be able to respond in these situations. So Taser et al. Actually did a series of two studies where they taught teenagers with mild cognitive abilities to do a couple of things. The first is actually recognize when you're lost. So one of the difficulties is very often the parent recognizes, wait a minute, where are they? I don't know where they are, but I don't know how to get to them. And it may be quite a while before the person who is lost actually recognizes, uh-oh, I'm no longer interested in what I was doing, and I realize I don't know how to get back to a safe place. Mm-hmm. So if we can teach the individual with an autism spectrum disorder to recognize more quickly that they are lost, that is critical to decreasing that unmonitored time. The second step that they taught them to do was to actually use a cell phone to call for help. So they had a cell phone with them and used a speed dial option to be able to call for help. And when they called for help, taught them to describe their surroundings or state their location if they used it. So if you think about it, those are those three critical components to assisting with the retrieval. And retrieval is always going to be quicker and easier if the person that you're trying to retrieve can help. So recognize that you're lost relatively quickly. Don't panic. Use a cell phone to call for help and then describe your surroundings. They were able to teach every one of these teenagers to respond effectively when lost and use these skills. Now, there are some other, these were teenagers with mild cognitive disabilities, but for individuals who maybe have more substantial difficulties and less language, we can still teach them to respond effectively when lost, but we need some additional support. So there are a couple of studies that have developed some interesting and effective protocols that I think could be very useful for families. So the first one that I want to tell you about, and we're on the next slide now, is Bridget Taylor et al. Taught teenagers with autism and moderate disability to wear a vibrating pager. And that eliminates that you have to recognize that you're lost. So the teenager has the pager, and when the parent realizes, hey, I don't know where they are, they call the number and the pager goes off. And when the pager goes off, the teenager then approached a safe adult and handed them a card. And the card said, I need your help. I have autism. Please call this number. So that essentially removes the burden from the individual with an autism spectrum disorder for a couple of those skill sets that we just talked about. They don't have to necessarily recognize that they are lost without someone helping them. So that pager signal is what lets them know, wait a minute, you need to seek help. And then it removes all of the need to be able to explain, answer questions, or talk to others. So I think this can be a great strategy to teach, and hopefully you never need to use it, but by teaching it, that I think gives you a wonderful safety net for if something ever does happen, that the individual does know what to do. So I often recommend for families that are that really want to start exploring their community and teaching their, 8 to 10 to 12, even to teenager, how to be able to navigate the mall and respond and, if we take public transportation somewhere, that they feel more confident if they've got this kind of protocol in place. Now, an updated study by the same group published in 2009 took a slightly different approach. So here, they actually taught teenagers with autism and moderate disabilities not to respond to a pager, but to actually carry a cell phone with them so that instead of mom or dad paging them when they're lost, they simply call them on the cell phone. And when the cell phone rings, they answer it, approach a store staff or adult that can help them, and hand them the phone and a card that says, I have autism. Mom, I'm lost. My mom's on the phone. Help her find me. So that is just a slightly different version using newer technology in order to provide those additional supports so that a person who might not have all of the same skill sets can still know how to help the world find them and reunite them with their families if they ever do get lost. Let's move on to the next slide and talk about community safety with respect to stranger safety and street crossing. So if in fact, you know, our goal for every individual with an autism spectrum disorder is to help them lead the fullest life possible, and that means exploring your neighborhood and making friends and potentially one day doing things without your family, just like I hope for my 9-year-old daughter that, you know, there becomes a bigger world that she is safe exploring. But I'm not going to count on her being safe without me teaching her how to be safe and making sure that she really has particularly these two skill sets, and that is knowing how to respond to strangers and how to stay safe when she is unmonitored and how to cross streets safely. So I want to talk a little bit about a couple of studies that I've done teaching individuals with autism spectrum disorders these skill sets. The majority of these children that I'm going to tell you about that I have worked with, these are children who went through behavior analytic programming to help them get ready to be fully integrated in school and it was successful. But as they were getting ready to go to school, you know, we kind of began to realize we've gotten them to the point where they are going to be out there with other, you know, first, second, third, fourth graders. They're going to be making friends, and they're going to be doing these things. And we need them to be safer and more discriminating about who it's okay to kind of approach and who's a stranger and kind of how to navigate their world safely. So if you look at the next slide, this is an article that we published in a journal in 2010, and it is addressing the issue of stranger safety. So now abduction by strangers is rare, but it does happen. And I think that it is something that all parents have apprehension about. We wish we lived in a perfectly safe world where every person was a good, amazing person with no ill intent. But we don't live in that world. And particularly children with autism might be susceptible to stranger persuasion. There are actually pretty well-documented lures or strategies that strangers use when they attempt to take a child. And we want, you know, a child with autism might be susceptible to that because we've taught them to do what adults tell you and to be compliant, and potentially even when those adults change every year or a few months as teachers, as support personnel, do what they tell you. And as, you know, a person needs to operate a little more independently, they need to kind of have a rule set about the conditions under which you do want to do everything an adult tells you and the conditions under which maybe you don't. So when a stranger approaches a child and tries to get them to go away with them, it is critical to teach a very specific repertoire and to teach the child to do this virtually immediately because time is of the essence. And that is, don't go with them. Say no loudly and firmly and not be tentative. Run and find an adult and tell them what happened, because we do not want these kinds of individuals to be just out there potentially approaching other children as well. So this is the skill set that we're now talking about. So before we were talking about how can you help somebody retrieve you if you are lost, now we're talking about what if someone approaches you and you don't know them and they are trying to get you to go with them. So don't go. Say no loudly and firmly. Run. Find someone and tell them. The thing about teaching this kind of skill set, it is definitely teachable. This is taught as standard curriculum to most kindergarten to second grade children, if you have a police-based community safety program that partners with your school system, they're probably going to encounter some version of stranger safety. But here's what's important. A child might be able to tell you the rules and what they should do and then not actually do it when a reasonably pleasant-looking stranger approaches them. So it's very important when we are talking about this issue of stranger safety to ensure that children actually use these skills in natural settings when someone that they have never seen before approaches them and when it has been a long time since you have trained it. So the likelihood that a stranger will approach a child is low. If it does occur, it's rare, and it's probably not likely to occur the week after you teach them this skill set. So you want to teach them. You want to kind of make sure that they actually do respond to a so-called friendly stranger, someone that you know but they don't, that they respond the way you would want them to. And you want to periodically revisit these rules and practice it to make sure they're still going to be safe. So let me tell you a little bit about what we did as we were teaching these abduction prevention skills, and I am on the next slide. We were working with three boys with autism who were about to transition into general education. So they had done very well in their kind of preschool, kindergarten, first grade experiences with us providing behavioral support. And they were really ready to be able to learn from a general education environment, group instructions. They were making friends, but they absolutely did not know a stranger, and that's a problem. So we actually conducted probes where an unknown adult who was what we call a Confederate, that means we knew them, we knew they were safe, they were actually staff from a different location of our services. We created a situation where the child was alone for a few minutes in their natural setting, and this unknown adult approached them and presented one of the four most common known lures, which are a simple request of, hey, come over here with me, and then they take their hand and take them away, an incentive, if you come with me, I've got something really cool in my car that I want to show you, an authority lure, your mom told me to come and get you and to bring you to her, or an assistance request. I need to carry this outside, and I wondered if you would help me with that. So those are actually the four strategies that are most commonly used with younger children. And so we tried those just to kind of see how would these children respond. Would they respond to these strangers in a safe way? And this is all pre-training. We were alarmed at how likely they were to go away with the stranger. And in our probes, as soon as they kind of said yes and we're going away with the stranger, we kind of had the stranger say, oh, you know what, I've got to go, and obviously didn't actually take the child away. But it was clear that we needed to teach them. So let me tell you a little bit about our teaching procedures on the next slide. We used a strategy that is called behavioral skills training. And it's basically very specific instruction. You don't want to be in any way abstract or metaphorical about this. You want to give them very clear rules with verbal instructions. We used video modeling and live modeling where we showed them exactly what they should do, how loud to say no, how fast to run. We had them practice with a stranger who visited and familiar adults. And we praised a lot and then coached when there were errors. Until they got really good at this. So like I said, we certainly have good evidence you can teach these skills, and we were able to teach these skills. And in fact, within about 1 hour of instruction spread over some brief teaching sessions, the children were able to do the skills very reliably and quickly and exactly how we wanted them to do, which is wonderful. So then we did those natural probes again. So during the skills training, the child knows you're teaching me something, and this is what I'm supposed to do. So we repeated those what we call in situ probes in the natural environment where the child did not know that this is, you know, the time when I'm supposed to respond this way, but a stranger approached them, and how did they do? So if you look at the next slide, we're looking at a graph, and you can see for each of the three children that we worked with, in baseline, that's pre-teaching, and we want kids to be a 4-4-4. They do every single step. They don't go. They say no. They run, and they tell someone. And any score below that means that they didn't do those things. And often, and any score that's a 0 or a 1, they went with the adult or stayed right there in proximity where even if they didn't willingly walk away, the adult could easily grab them. So that's just absolutely unacceptable. We need them doing better than this, or we're never going to feel safe letting them be in any way unmonitored. So we did the training, and what you're looking at here post-training is in those situations where they did not know that this was a stranger opportunity, how well did they do? And again, we want those 4-4-4s. And you can see that two of our children, Sammy in the top panel and Charles in the bottom panel, did really well. They responded to those situations, even though they didn't know this was a kind of safe monitored opportunity, they responded to them exactly the way we would want them to in almost every instance, which is wonderful. So for each of them, we just periodically did those follow-up probes just to make sure things were still going well, and they were. Now for the middle panel, that's Michael, and things didn't go so well. And by the way, these are all false names, but here things didn't go so well. His responding was very variable, where sometimes he responded well and sometimes he absolutely did not and didn't do much better than baseline. And that was very concerning to us. So we did some booster session training and what have you, and eventually got him to the point where he was consistently responding the way we felt comfortable with. We did follow-up. And then we actually did a natural environment probe in his neighborhood. So all of the rest of these probes occurred around our center-based school program. But for him, we actually went into his neighborhood and had a Confederate approach while he was riding his bicycle, and he did a great job. So we began to feel more comfortable that these children would actually respond to strangers who approached them in a way that was safe. So I am running out of time. Okay, so I'm just going to mention real briefly another project that we've done is we are developing a virtual reality-based program that uses that same behavioral skills training model to teach children how to cross the street effectively using an interactive computer program. They do all their practice on street crossing actually in the computer virtual environment, and using like a joystick and a computer program. And then if you look on the next slide, what we have done when we have evaluated this with several preteens and young teenagers with Asperger's and high-functioning autism is we actually conducted street crossing probes in the natural environment to see whether they follow those rules of stop at the sidewalk, look both ways, only go if a car is not coming. Continue to look both ways in case the traffic situation changes, and don't stop. Keep going across the street and remain safe. So we were able to teach these skills, but I'm going to have to just move on and summarize here. So for today, here we've talked about this two-pronged approach, and I recommend always think about today and think about tomorrow. So for today and the near today, monitoring and protection is, of course, the way to go. So that is that supervision, potentially considering an alert system that will help you feel more confident about a safety net if anything ever does happen, and a retrieval system that can really minimize the amount of time that your loved one might be unmonitored and susceptible to the other dangers that exist in the environment. But for the rest of their lives, as we try to build that larger community and allow access to the same world that every other family has, is really about skill building and functional independence and targeting these kinds of community safety skills that will allow an individual to be part of the solution if they do get lost, to know who are safe people and how should you respond when you're not sure someone is safe, and to kind of know how to navigate traffic or all of those kinds of things that that we have to know how to navigate, and that we only get good at by practicing, but by creating opportunities for them to practice that in safe ways. So I just encourage families, and we'll talk about these last few final thoughts on the last slide, is when you are in a situation where you know your loved one does not have the skills that they need, or that they might wander off or elope, that is so fear-producing. And it can lead you to be just not even able to think about a future in which the world can be bigger, and that there can be the opportunity to explore more, to do more, to enjoy community outings without that constant fear and dread. And so if there is anyone on the call who either is in that situation or knows loved ones or friends that are in that situation and dealing with that enormous stress, you know, it is always possible to make change and to dream about a future where there are more possibilities than there are right now, and to find partners to make those dreams a reality. We have an evidence base that tells us how to teach these skills. And if you do have access to a behavioral services provider, a BCBA, they should be able to help teach each of these safety skill sets and help you know how to practice them. And we also have community resources that can be available for monitoring and retrieval. So I think often this is something that people don't think about doing anything differently, although they have these fears. And I think, you know, often it's a situation, families who have asked me for help, they fear the safety issues, and they also fear not having the future that they want for their child. And they decide that facing the safety fears is how they're going to procure that future. And so even though they know my child may not be unmonitored at all ever for the next 4 to 5 years, it might take me a couple of years to teach them all the safety skills that they need. So we've got to start teaching the safety skills now, even if I know that I'm not going to allow them to be unmonitored for a while. So it's about starting to find tomorrow's solutions today. Start earlier than you think you need to, in order to kind of create those repertoires. So just a reminder, I'm Linda LeBlanc, and I'm the Executive Director of Research and Clinical Services at Trumpet Behavioral Health. I hope that you found the information useful, and that you are able to make use of some of this information in a way that helps your families be safer and less stressed in the future. That is it. Thank you.
Thank you. To help us evaluate and improve our program, please complete the following short survey. If you are a Cigna employee, we ask that you please refrain from participating in the survey. After the last question, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. Your individual responses will be kept confidential. And our first survey question, this session provided me with information on strategies for community safety issues for individuals with autism spectrum disorders. Please press star 1 if you strongly agree, star 2 if you agree, star 3 if you disagree, and star 4 if you strongly disagree. We'll pause for just a moment to assemble your responses. And for our second question, this session educated me on how to create strategies for building independence for a person with autism spectrum disorders. Press star 1 if you strongly agree, star 2 if you agree, star 3 if you disagree, and star 4 if you strongly disagree. We'll pause again for just a moment. Question 3. Overall, this session met my expectations. Please select one of the following responses. Star 1 if you agree. Let me start question 3 over again. For overall, this session met my expectations. Please select 1 if the following responses. Star 1 if you strongly agree. Star 2 if you agree. Star 3 if you disagree. Star 4 if you strongly disagree. We'll pause for just a moment. And for our fourth question, I would recommend this program to others. Press star 1 if you agree. If you do not agree, press star 2. And for our final question, please select the response that best describes your role in the life of an individual with autism. Press star 1 if I am enrolled in the Cigna family's first autism program. Star 2, I am the parent of a child with autism. Star 3, I am a family member of a child with autism. Star 4, for other. We'll pause for just a moment. And that does conclude our survey. Thank you for your feedback and for participating in our program. If you would like to make any additional comments to help us improve this program or have any questions on today's topic, press star 1 to have your line opened to the conference. And if you are on a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow the signal to reach our equipment. And that is star 1 if you have any additional comments. We'll pause for just a moment. And as a reminder, that's star 1 if you would like to ask a question or make a comment. And it appears we have no questions at this time.
Okay, thank you. Thank you so much for attending, and thank you, Dr. LeBlanc, for providing such wonderful insights today. Again, if you have specific questions about therapies discussed today, please contact the autism team by calling the number on the back of your insurance card. Please be sure to mark your calendars to join our next autism awareness seminar. That will be on June 14th, 2012 at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time or 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, when we will be discussing fostering friendships between children with autism and typically developing peers. Thank you, and have a great day.
That does conclude today's conference. Thank you all for your participation.